The video version of this episode can be found at patreon.com/flagtimepodcast.
You know what's so weird though? Like the engine dipstick is so fucking skinny compared to like an ATF dipstick.
It's also in a different spot.
It is.
It's also attached yellow, to the engine.
The speedrunner of transmission repair, Rigo Ratio, joins us this week on Flag Time.
Hey, everybody. You know the videos of that guy that blows apart transmissions on fucking Instagram and TikTok in like 2 seconds? That's this guy.
Hold up.
This guy, I don't even fucking know how an automatic transmission works. That's not true. I know how they work. But like, you're like, I can't rebuild a 4L60. People are like, you can't rebuild a 4L60 in 5 minutes. And then you just do it.
This guy does.
You're like, bet. That's fucking crazy. Like, how did you get started? Oh, wait, I guess we should probably introduce who you are first.
So, welcome to the Flag Time Podcast, the automotive service podcast, where we talk a lot about not that. The person who was just talking was Sterling. I'm Serrated Mobius, and you always got Pixie. Our guest tonight is...
Captain Yapper over here.
Yeah, our guest tonight is Rodrigo Rivera, or Rigo Ratio, as he's known on his social medias. For those who might not know who you are, what are you known for, basically, on social media right now?
I mean, putting together transmissions, I guess, and saying this funny shit.
The transmission god.
Yeah.
Showing my speed.
Hell yeah. I imagine you know more about transmissions than the three of us do combined. So.
Oh, definitely.
Probably.
I mean, yeah, shit. I've been doing it since... I mean, my dad's had the shop for like over, I would say, 33 years.
Holy shit. You know? Hell yeah.
Wow. And, that's cool.
Yeah, so... I grew up in the shop. Like, my dad had me running around since I was, like, 5 years old. You know, I was just
a kid. That explains a lot.
Well, that explains everything. When did you first, like, when did you rebuild your first transmission?
13 years old. I did a 4L60.
13. Fuck, man.
Yeah, a little bit before that. Like, it was baby steps, you know? Like, at first, my dad was like, clean this shit up. And then put this drum together and you test supply it, and then put this other drum, and I put all these drums, and then he would test supply, install them, and then one day he was like, you try slipping them into the case, and you know, just baby steps. And when I was 13, that's when I installed a live car. Like, I took it apart, diagnosed it, put it together, installed in the car, and
fuck, drove a bitch.
Hell yeah.
I was playing Zelda games when I was 13.
I was playing games too, bro. Red Dead Redemption. That was like that kind of like timeline.
I was going to ask you, because I looked at your follows list and it's very video game related. Oh. So like, what are you playing right now?
Right now, I'm on a break, bro. So I'm doing this fucking social media thing. I didn't realize how much work it was. You know, like,
dude, fuck yeah, dude.
At first, it was fucking fun, you know? I did a video, shit blew up, and then I did a video, blew up, and now it's, like, almost like a job, you know? Yeah. Now it's, like, shit, I gotta come out with the next video, what's the next idea, keep it entertaining and shit, and I'm also working my master's degree, so...
Oh, hell yeah.
I love fucking games, but I'm fucking...
You're a busy guy.
Yeah, I come home and hit the bed, shit, but last game that I played that was fucking... Well, that relationship already took a shit, but it almost ruined our relationship. I was playing Elden Ring to like 2 or 3 a.m. testing at the screen, bro. I've never played a game to the point where it made me hate myself, you know? There's games where like, you can't get past the level, bro. But this game, you actually go to sleep a fucking loser, you know? And then you have to fucking wake up the next day and go at it again, you know?
It's like me playing Batman too.
The best part is Elden Ring is the easiest game of the Soulsborne series.
Yeah. My girlfriend completed Bloodborne 3 times. Like, completed front to back. It's fucking nuts.
That's fucking crazy.
Just real quick, favorite video game of all time?
Fuck. Probably Fallout 4.
Fallout 4? Hell yeah.
Yeah. I would go to work building a transmission, thinking about how can I build up my settlement? What the fuck do I need to do next? How can we fucking level up, bro? Like, I thought about that game 24/7.
Fuck yeah.
That shit was above the transmission, you know?
But yeah, going back to the social media is a job thing, the listeners of this podcast already know, but like, when I started this podcast with these guys, after a year of doing it, I started an LLC and we started a Patreon. So I basically have 2 jobs on top of being a Mercedes technician. So it's fucking, it's a lot of work. Yes, it's 100% a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But we can go into that with the, I guess we could just talk about, like, we've already talked about how you started working on these transmissions, and you've basically been in the same shop since you were a kid, pretty much.
Yeah, same yeah. shit every day.
Hell yeah. What kind of transmissions mainly do you work on? Is it like a certain brand, or is it just anything that comes in?
There's some cars that I just fucking hate working on, mm-hmm. but I mostly think on top of my head, I live in Santa Ana, right? So mm-hmm. highly Mexican culture. So there's a lot of, within that area, it's very industrial. So I get a lot of plumbing companies, guardian companies, electrical companies. So it's a bunch of fleet trucks, you know?
Okay.
I do a lot of, 1500s, 2500 trucks, either Chevy, GM, as for Fords, F-150s, 250s, 350s, you know, I do a lot of trucks. Gotcha. But I've dabbled with Hondas, Toyotas, a couple BMWs. I've done Mercedes, the 7226. Fucking love that unit.
Hell yeah.
Dodge. I got mixed feelings with Dodge. I won't let them down, but I will still dabble with the Dodge. But fuck, man, those vowel bodies. Dodge usually make me pull my hair, you know. But
yeah.
I'll fuck with those. Definitely not a fan of Volkswagen, at least for the automatics. Stick shifts are good, but the problem is, man, they're expensive, you know, they're imported.
Yeah.
And when I give a quote to my customers, they fucking get mad, you know, and they get heated and like, well, that's the fucking price, man. You know,
people get mad when you give them a price on repairs for their car. Like, why are you mad at me? Bro, I didn't fucking build your car.
It's the fact that they get angry
at Germany.
They get mad and they have no fucking idea how the goddamn car is put together.
Like, I wonder why this car was $65,000.
Well, that's the thing about like Mercedes transmissions, because I'm a dealer tech. Weird. So like people will come in and we'll give them the choice because we're trained. We go to an instructor led training course that shows us how to take the entire transmission apart and put it back together, clutch packs and drums and all. The only thing about it is, we'll give them the choice of either A, rebuilding the transmission if a clutch is burnt out, or B, replacing the transmission entirely. And usually replacing the entire transmission is the cheaper option because of the labor involved with rebuilding a transmission at a dealer. So because like us technicians, we don't do it all the time like you do. So our labor book times are really high when it comes to rebuilding a transmission. And in that case, it's just, you know, the cost is so astronomical compared to just replacing the entire unit, because we can just take it out, put it back in, send it on its way. And
like what's an example of a price?
I gotta remember, because one of my coworkers did it last like 2 years ago. And it ended up being like $1,500 more expensive just in labor costs to rebuild the transmission as opposed to put a new unit in.
What's like a job total on that? Like 5, 10, 15?
I don't know exactly. I don't remember. I'd have to look it up. Ayo, post-production Serrated Mobius here. I did some research. Just a really quick numbers game right here. It's not that big of a difference between the two. I just did a quick, like, if you do a rebuild, depending on the rebuild kit and the amount of labor that we could charge, you're looking at around $5,500. A replacement with a $3,500 transmission and 6 hours of labor at $250 an hour is $5,000. So while it's not a $1,500 difference, it is still $500 more expensive to do a rebuild than to replace an entire unit. Okay, back to the episode.
You're like, I don't know, man. I'm just a tech. I don't fucking make the prices.
However, because I do know how to replace all the clutch packs and stuff like that with my own personal vehicle, I can put new clutch packs in if I want to. So that's just the way that we do everything here.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy how independent shops and dealerships are completely different.
Wild.
Even it's independent shops from transmission independent shops too. Like transmission independent shops, like a lot of times shops that I've worked at have done, like independents have done, is they would take the transmission out of the car, send it to somebody to get rebuilt, and then bring it back and then put it back in the car. That's not super uncommon in a lot of independents.
But that's really common. That shit kind of fucking confuses me, dude, because it's hilarious because a person will drive, right? Because I'm in a cul-de-sac of shops. So it's me and a bunch of other general shops. Oh, yeah. I'm the only transmission shop there. Mm-hmm. And if you're listening to this video, I mean, just maybe touch grass, right? But like, it blows my mind how they can just drive to my shop and I can fucking charge them and give them the straight deal. But sometimes they'll go to my homie. I give him my price, the same fucking price. And then he has to bump it up a little to make money. So they're fucking spending more, you know?
Yeah, for exactly the same thing. Actually, probably you'd be worse off going to an independent shop because then there's two people working on your car instead of just one, right? So it's like third party like food delivery services. It's like you could have just gone to McDonald's. You didn't have to spend $50 on chicken nuggets. I don't want to move. Okay.
Well, I do want to bring this up because I feel like it is going to come up. I love seeing the discourse in the comment section of your videos about how you don't wear gloves.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I knew this was going
to
happen.
So like, it's
so fucking funny.
Did you expect that when you started posting these videos or?
No, bro. It's like fucking death threats for not wearing gloves, bro.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
I get crazy comments, bro. Like comments saying, too bad you're not going to see your wife and kids when you grow up. And
Jesus.
Leukemia is no joke, bro. Or like, oh, you're going to be getting multiple myelomas. Like all these crazy things, bro.
Like, and why do you care? Why don't you just mind your own shit?
And bro, the thing is, they don't fucking care. They don't go to sleep worrying, thinking like, oh my God, I hope Regal Ratio is being safe. Like they're just fucking, they're just fucking shit. You know, they just want to talk shit, which don't get me wrong. Like not wearing gloves, that isn't the best, right? Drinking alcohol isn't the fucking best, you know? But I mean, I don't know. Like, I enjoy it. I enjoy not wearing gloves. I feel like I have a better feel, you know?
Same. But I don't wear gloves either.
I don't know. Like, to be honest, now, knock on wood, right? But I, like, scientific experiment, right? Create a hypothesis. Does automotive create cancer? Now, I've grown up in a shop for 5 years. I've met hundreds of mechanics and I've never heard of one who has gotten skin cancer, you know, and I'm not sure if it's like the pool I'm in. I'm not saying it doesn't, but I don't know. It's just the way I fucking work. I teach at a college too. I shouldn't mention the school cause their fucking politics are weird, but I do teach at a school and I do tell my kids to wear gloves. You know, I mentioned, you should wear gloves, but I don't know. I just enjoy it when I wear gloves. Gives me the fucking ick, you know? I don't know.
No, I understand that completely.
Yeah, because like some people do, some people don't. It's a preference.
I wear gloves because my girlfriend won't let me touch her when I get home if I don't. So, but I like when I am wearing gloves and I'm working in like really tight situations, they're always getting caught on shit. So yeah, I can imagine when you're working on transmissions, you don't want an errand like a weird piece of latex just coming off and getting stuck in a clutch pack that could be really bad.
Yeah, that shit happens a lot, you know, like when you're, I mean, sometimes my fucking flesh gets caught into like some areas, like slipping it down in the fucking case. At least it's little bits, you know, but when a glove gets caught, you know, it breaks off a big chunk. And if a fucking glove gets in the valve body or plugs up a hole for an application, you're fucked, you know, so.
Why doesn't my second gear work no more?
Why is there a whole glove in my transmission? What's going on?
Do you do valve body stuff too?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, vacuum testing, cracking them open, shift kits, you know, increase line pressures. Increase quickness on shift, like all that jazz.
That's one thing that we don't do. We don't touch the valve bodies at all. Those are complete replacements at the dealer.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people get scared of valve bodies. Here's the thing. Like my dad came from Mexico, right? He fucking came in here, no knowledge, was a fucking farmer. And him and his brother started working at a shop, you know. They just started doing oil changes. And then from there, my dad got a gig at a transmission place called Tussin Transmissions. And he was just R&Ring. And my dad would fucking remove and replace like 3 to 4 transmissions a day. Like,
hell yeah.
He was like fucking hustling.
That's hard.
He had no knowledge. Christ. Yeah, but he would like look at those rebuilders, you know, and a lot of them were fucking dicks, dude. I'm not sure if it was because they saw my dad as like a lower being and shit, but like my dad would go look and they would be like, shoo, go away. But my dad would look at a distance, you know, and finally him and my and his brother, they opened up a shop and they kind of went in it blind, you know, but there is like, I think you can work on stuff just using like logistics, you know, like taking it apart, analyzing it slowly. Okay, this spins on here, this spins on there. Is there damage? No. Looking at the lip seals, is this damage? Like, they didn't have no book knowledge, you know, and they would fucking put these things together. And sometimes my dad didn't know what the fuck he was doing, you know. He would get, he would rebuild it, it's shifting shitty, he'll pull it out. Everything in the train is fine. He puts it back together. Shifts fucking shitty. He's like, I'm going to try a fucking valve body. And he kind of slowly started learning about problems like that, you know, just through experience. So he, I think, but anyways, to my point, right? Checking valve bodies, like usually, like if you take out the valve and it's cherry all around, there's a good chance it's square. Cause that was my dad's theory. You know, I went to school and told him like, yo, we can do vacuum testing to take it up another notch, you know, to check the valve body a lot more thoroughly because there's some things you can't visually see. But like from my experience, man, watching my dad, like as long as you look at the valve is pretty, then there's a good chance it's operating fine. Because usually if you get, you're getting like a leak through a valve, you're going to see a shining spot on that valve, you know, or you can just do a little wiggle test side to side and see if it's loose, you know, but it's not that common to have valve problems in a lot of cars, you know, and just like engines, you know, some engines don't have amazing compression, right? Like the compression drops slightly through the years, right? But you can still slap heads on that sucker and the fucker will run great, you know? So if valve bodies even have a little leaks going on, even like just rebuilding it, the car's gonna shift almost identical to like a fresh valve body, you know. So I think a lot of people get stressed out. I think people should like dabble with it more and just check them out. Are they all free? That's the biggest thing. You get a little pocket flathead, see if they're all free. All of them are free. You take one at a time, lay it down. You know, cool thing about tech is your fucking phone. Back in the day, there's no phones. Take a photo of it so you don't lose track if it was spring first or valve first in spring. And then just go through there, you know, but I don't think it's that hard, you know.
Hell yeah.
As long as you can just, I mean, really the only things that aren't obviously like you can look at conditions of things like that are just there just based off of like mechanical knowledge in general. But like, I guess you'd still, the only things you really have to look up are like torque specs.
Right.
Or some, or like special stuff like that. But I mean, I remember when I was, I don't know, I was like 16. I had my 86 Ford F-150 with a 300 inline six and a C6 transmission. Mm-hmm. And I put a B&M shift kit in that. And I had never taken apart a valve body or a transmission or anything before, ever. And I was just like, you know what? I can fucking try this. I dropped the valve body. I was enamored by how fucking crazy the it was like, it sounded like a labyrinth or something. Like, wow. Yeah, and then like a bunch of shit fell out of it. Like the little check balls and stuff fell out. I was like, oh.
That's not good.
So I read the manual though, but I was like, I can't put this back together without looking up how to do this. Cause I don't want to do this wrong. Cause I don't want to tear this out again.
You did that on the car?
I did that on the car in my driveway when I was like 16 or 17.
That's a tough one, bro.
But the manual came with instructions and it came with like, here's where everything in the valve body goes. So I was like, okay, I can follow directions at least. But I mean, the fucking thing did crazy burnouts after that, which was pretty cool. So it was worth it. I mean, that's why I put it in.
It's fucking crazy. You're chilling. It's fucking crazy how much a shift kit can change a transmission. And sometimes they come with a shit ton of springs, they come with a little bit of springs, but like you increase the fucking line pressure on one valve, increase the spring tensions on the shifting valves, and fucking makes the thing fucking buck nice. You know?
Yeah, like, I know. It's really fun. Cheap.
Some of them are like $50, you know, which is nuts.
Yeah. I remember I haven't really done too much with automatics. Like the only things I've done are like that. I used to have a 97 Crown Vic with the 4R70W in it. Mm-hmm. And I remember something, it was a to something to speed up the 1-2 shift. I think it was like you take a spring out or a plunger out or something, and then it shifts faster. It would shift so fast into second, it would squeal the belt.
Oh.
It was pretty wild.
Flag Time will be right back after this word from our sponsor. This episode of Flag Time is brought to you by the Flag Time Patreon. That's literally where we're getting all of our funding from. Flag Time Patreon is where you can see the video versions of all of our episodes from episode 30 onwards. We have three tiers that you can choose from. $3 tier that just lets you see the video episodes outright. A $6 tier that lets you see the video episodes and a bunch of other extra content, including access to our Discord. And a $15 tier that Pixie doesn't think you have the balls to get. $15 a month gets you everything that the $3 and $6 tiers get, including a shout out at the end of the episode. And also a listener interaction exclusive portion of the podcast specifically catered towards you guys. The Flag Time Podcast Patreon. Subscribe today to see.
Hi, Stirworks here. We here at Flag Time want to let you guys know that Apple has required Patreon to use their in-app purchasing system and remove all other billing options from their iOS services. This means that Apple's 30% App Store fee will be added to our existing tier prices, ramping up the cost. We want you to avoid this by using your browser on your Apple device for any Patreon purchases after November of 2024. Doing this bypasses the 30% App Store fee and doesn't allow an already successful corporation to nickel and dime you as the consumer. Existing supporters don't need to worry, as this only affects new members. Thank you for your attention, and we appreciate your continued support of this dumbass show.
Well, before we go to the Patreon questions for you, Rigo, you said you had a story to tell, Pixie?
Yes. So we have a new kid at the shop. He's like the lube tech, but he's hourly, so he like does like the cleaning, the organizing, the back room and stuff. He's like 19, very fresh to this trade, right?
Mm-hmm.
His girlfriend wanted a car. I don't remember if he bought it for her or what, but it's in the shop right now. He bought a salvage titled 2013 Volkswagen Beetle.
Oh,
Lord have mercy.
He was working on it, and he was watching a YouTube video about something because it like didn't start.
Watching a fucking Chris Fix video or something.
Yeah.
Hey guys, Chris Fix here.
He was watching the video and he's like, "Huh, these fuses don't look like the fuse box in the video. Let me move them all around to where it looks like in this video."
Oh god.
Yes.
So he moved it around. It obviously, it still didn't fucking start.
He fucked up a lot of shit now.
Yeah.
It is now on fire.
Not only is it a Volkswagen Beetle, it's the Beetle with the 2.5 in it.
Oh, the not Volvo engine.
Yeah, the really bad one.
The 5-cylinder that Volkswagen made for some reason.
Is it a 5-cylinder? It's the 2013 Beetle. It's got
The 2.5 is a 5-cylinder.
It's an inline 5. I didn't know that. I was like, he probably would.
That's why it sounds like a Volvo.
Like, it probably would have been okay if it was the 1.8 or the 2.0, whatever the other engine option was.
Yeah, those are fine.
No, and then I'm hearing all the shit about why it's not starting and everything. It sounds like the crank sensor isn't reading anything at all because the RPM gauge isn't going up, nothing when you crank it. And then I realized he spent $4,000 on the fucking car.
You can't.
For a salvage title Beetle with 140,000 miles on.
I know inflation's a thing, but what the fuck?
Where do you fucking buy that? Big Bill Hell's Cars?
I don't know, but it was. I was like, that's like, it's a salvage title car.
We've got a lot of Patreon questions to get through, so in the essence of time, we'll go ahead and do this. Excuse me.
He's popular now.
He's popular.
All right. Premium members on our Patreon get to ask questions to our guests, and we don't overlook them. So we'll start with the first one here by Elysium Darkness. What Euro transmissions have you worked on, and which one is your favorite/least favorite?
Okay, so my favorite of all time is going to be the Mercedes 7226.
Hell yeah.
That one's fucking, I feel like that one's bulletproof, man. Like, it's kind of crazy. A lot of those transmissions, the filters get clogged up after a lot of miles, and sometimes the car won't fucking move. And they'll bring in a tow truck. You slap a new filter on that thing, and that thing will fucking run for another 100,000. Like, those units are really good. I've worked on a couple ZFs. I've done the five speeds on the BMWs. Dabbled with the eight speeds. BMW is pretty good. As for Volkswagen, I'm sorry, I fucking hate Volkswagen for automatics. Like, dude, their valve bodies have so much plastic in there. Like, areas where plastic should not be placed, you know?
I have a question.
Shoot it.
Have you ever rebuilt a transmission in a Eurovan before?
Eurovan?
Like a Volkswagen Eurovan?
Oh, like the old ass ones?
Not a, well, I mean, like early 2000s. They made them from 95, 94 to 2003. It's like a T4 Volkswagen.
I don't even know what the fuck that looked like, honestly.
Well, probably not then. I mean, there's probably no Eurovans in California or anywhere in California.
My dad hates European cars, man. When European customers come, he's like fucking shoo. I'm like, no way, like let's fucking double. You know? But my dad's always like shoo, go away, I don't touch that. And no, we'll check it out if it's worth my while, you know. But I don't know, I'm not a fan of Volkswagens. As for stick shifts, I think they're good, you know.
It's,
I think a stick shift,
you know, it goes up.
There's a rabbit outside. Yeah.
Unless you don't fucking shift your gears and you ride the clutch like a son of a gun. But yeah, my favorite, I like Mercedes. I think out of all European cars, I think Mercedes are pretty fucking bulletproof. You know,
you
look at Mercedes. When you look at Mercedes, I mean, Mercedes cars like all across the world are like in fucking tough ass areas. You know, like Egypt has a lot of Mercedes. Africa has a lot of Mercedes. Fucking crazy ass weather. And it goes to show that they're pretty fucking bitching cars, you know? My favorite would be the 7226, without a doubt.
Hell yeah. Patreon member Forced User asks, what's the most unexpected thing someone has said since you started your real streak? Nice and negative.
You mean comments?
Yes.
Nicest thing.
Nice things.
Hey, I get a lot of nice comments, so I don't know what the fuck.
I mean, I did one video recently because I've been going through a lot of shit these past months, and I kind of did like a motivation video. I'm not sure if you saw that, but I got a couple comments from a couple people of saying like, you know, I was in a really tough spot, but me watching your videos really motivated me to get into the business of automotive, and you really pushed me to excel, you know, like shit like that. I got a couple, which kind of blew my mind.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I don't know, bro. Like, I do these videos, and at the same time, too, dude, like, I'm not really familiar with social media. Like, when I hit 9 million views, like, first video I posted, that's my biggest video. That's just, like, at 26 mil, I think.
And I woke up, Jesus Christ.
I woke up in the morning, bro, and it was at 3 million. And I didn't even bat an eye because I don't fucking know social media. I was like, oh, cool, 3 million.
This is normal. I think that's good.
And you were like, okay, carry on.
And then I went to school where I teach, and one of my buddies, he does YouTube, and I was like, hey, check this out, I got 3 million. You think that's pretty good? And he just fucking looked me dead in the eye and walked
what?
Away. No, he was like, I'm not sure if I was being a smart ass, but I don't know this shit, you know? So I don't know, like it blows my mind how interested people would have been into this, you know, because I've been doing this my whole life. I didn't think much of it. When I did a media page, I didn't think this shit would happen. It's crazy because I did three videos. They did shit, right? Like 100 views, 50 views. As soon as I put the GoPro on my head, that's when that shit fucking took off, which is fucking, I think people really love that first person, like in your feet type of video, you know?
The POV stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so I think people really vibe with that, and I didn't think I would connect with so many people. I didn't think my job was that amazing, because the thing is, I grew up into this shit, right? Mm-hmm. So this is like normal for me. This is like wiping my ass. It's like put together that transmission. It's like, okay, time to wipe my ass, right? Like I grew up into this. I didn't think it was that amazing or complicated, because I just grew up into it and it's so fucking easy for me. So I didn't think I would resonate so much with people. So I think that was pretty badass that I'm motivating people. But like, as for nasty comments, it'd probably be like those fucking glove comments. Like your wife and your kids are going to be looking at you in your funeral in a couple of years, or like you're not gonna. Yeah, bro. Like I'm like, fuck. Like chill. Like okay, I'm not wearing gloves. Like I don't know.
Fucking taking baths and transmission fluid. Like.
See, the thing is there are some people that are on the internet that just they live to see other people just be unhappy.
Oh,
that's just like
yeah.
they'll just like get off on that for and some reason.
Thing, you can't.
Oh, struggle.
You gotta take that stuff in stride because I got a death threat for replacing a dust filter.
I'm gonna kill you if you take my cabin filter out,
exactly,
boy.
Yeah. Like I had to do a comparison later to show that like this is why we're replacing it because it's not supposed to look like this. But
it's dirty, yeah, no. And you breathe unhealthy. I mean, it's unhealthy to breathe air through a dirty filter. You should probably replace this to prolong your life.
I'm gonna kill you in your sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck so, you. Yeah,
you just gotta ignore those guys pretty much. I block every single person that like tries to be an asshole. So
I don't because I think I mean if you fucking think about it, man, bad publicity is good publicity, you know. And you
I understand like, that, but like when somebody
a P. Diddy.
Not like that, bro. We're talking gloves here.
I know. Yeah. Fucking baby oil, man.
When somebody came up to one of my videos and told me to sit down after I like expressed that I was going to go like to three more classes to get my master certification, I was like, you don't deserve to see any of my shit anymore. Like,
you're done.
Yeah. That's you're the way done. I see it. But we'll go on to the next
spoiled.
Question here.
I haven't had any negative comments at all. Then again, I don't have a lot of followers compared to a lot of people.
There's like a number that you pass where everybody just starts being mean to you.
I'm waiting for that to happen.
Unless, I don't know. I get like, you were saying earlier, you get the motivational comments. Like, I get people like DMing me and they're like, I was about to kill myself. And then I saw one of your videos and now I'm not going to do that. And I'm like,
that's definitely bad.
Wow.
Like, thanks.
I'm like, okay. I don't know how to feel about that. But you good got for guy you, guy.
With, and you have those guys. Those
cool
those guys that like fucking. You remember the guy with the Mini Cooper that drove it in the fucking in the park? You have guys like that in your comments.
Okay, yeah, we need to take a quick side tangent because there is a story that I need to tell you real quick.
Really, but
just real quick. So a little while back, some guy commented just some. I think it was just some misogynistic bullshit on my fucking one of my videos, and I just like. Looked at his profile and I found a video of him in a mini in like an old Mini Cooper doing like drifting. He called it drifting around a fucking kid's playground in like a park. And somebody was in my comments. I took that video and I just posted that video to my Instagram story. And someone was like, I know where that park is. I know where this town is. I'm telling the police and sending that video to them. And it's just like, okay.
That dude's Instagram page, like,
I reported him to the police. Oh, and yeah, and then he disappeared. So he either got arrested or I don't know.
Yeah. All right, we'll go on to the next question here.
Maybe he's getting his shit pushed in. Who knows?
The forklift guy asks, what is your choice brand of power tools and why?
You know, when it comes to tools, I feel like I've been around all tools. And don't get me wrong, I think like Snap-on, Matco, all that shit's bitching, right? It looks pretty. You get those tools and it's like, God, you're drooling just looking at those fucking wrenches, right? But man, they're fucking expensive. Like, mm-hmm. honestly, like, one cool thing about, like, Amazon is you can fucking get a lot of fair tools on it, bro. Like, so I was going to get a complete set of Snap-on wrenches, right? 8 to 24 millimeter. Fucking shit was going to be, like, $600, $700. Blech. I went on Amazon. I found one for $210.
There
dude, I beat the shit out of those things. Sometimes I got a nut that won't come off. On the ratcheting portion, right? Mm. I'll put that ratcheting portion on that nut, get my 32-ounce hammer, and just fucking try to loosen up that bolt.
Hell yeah.
I haven't broken one since, bro.
Blast that shit to fucking hell and back.
I haven't broken one. And
beat the shit out of my wrenches with a hammer, too, and they won't come off.
Yeah, and I fucking impact swivel set. You dabble with you use those a lot, right? To take off like the bell housing bolts at an angle with that long ass extension. Mm-hmm. And
those are great.
yeah, I bought a gear wrench impact set. I beat the shell of them. They fucking kick ass, dude. Like
gear wrench makes great shit.
Yeah, I think they make really good stuff. And like, here's another like fucking hypothesis, right? Like, so a 3/3 drive electric gun from Snap-on. I fucking bought one. Shit was like $400. Now, when you're dropping oil pans for transmissions, fucking fluid spews out, you know, makes a mess. Yeah. It's kind of hard not to get fluid on your fucking gun. I did like 3 oil pans, got fluid on the gun a couple times. By the end of it, the fucking gun was smoking and it wasn't working. Yeah. Then I take it to my Snap-on guy and he's like, okay, we can fix it. It's like an $85 charge, right? For them to rebuild it and shit.
Jesus.
I thought this thing had a warranty on it, man.
I think it was past a year, but even though like a year, I still think that's fucking silly for a $500 gun. Yeah. So I took it back, they rebuilt it, same shit. And then I took it back, they rebuilt it, same shit. From there, I bought a DeWalt electric gun, right? Fucking what? $155, 3/8 drive. Dude, I could submerge that fucking gun in ATF and it'll fucking kick. Like, I still have it to this day. I've had it for like fucking 5 years. Like, as for electric guns, like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure Milwaukee's just as good, but man, like, that shit's fucking bulletproof compared to an expensive ass thing. So I kind of moved away from really expensive tools. As for my air guns, I still dabble with truck guns for air guns. I like Aircat. I have a Mac 3/8 gun that I use on all my videos. That thing fucking rips. And as for like my big mama jamma, I use a 1/2-inch Snap-on impact gun, you know, but
hell yeah.
For like my favorite, I don't know. I love DeWalt. Like thinking about like a gun that has taken the beating of a lifetime. I use that fucking 3/8 on lug nuts on wheels, bro. Like I beat the shit out of that thing and it fucking kicks ass. Like, I don't know.
You can't really go wrong with DeWalt or Milwaukee. Like, they're both great. Some people are like weird about it. They're like elitist about it. And I'm just like, yeah.
The performance difference between those two brands is like virtually negligible. You just pick a color. They'll do the same shit.
I'm over here with
radio like shit just because I have all the batteries, but like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, whatever people, you have the batteries for, just fucking go for it.
But I feel like people would get to the point where it's like almost like fucking politics, bro. Like fucking liberals against
which
Republicans.
House do you belong to?
Damn, he's a shit fucking liberal.
It's fucking crazy, bro.
Midwestern Metalhead 03 asks, my buddy has a 1980 Chevy square body with, I believe, a turbo hydromatic. His linkage arm came loose, so he decided to fucking weld it. On a scale of 1 to fucked, how cooked is he?
Turbo 350?
1980 Chevy square body. It doesn't say any numbers.
It's either a 350 or a 400, probably. Or a 700 R4.
Same fucking shit on the linkage. I'm a little confused on what the fuck was welded, right? Because if you fucking welded a pivot that's designed to fucking bend, you know, I don't know how the fuck that's gonna fucking work.
But maybe he welded the bracket to the shift rod.
Yeah, the shift bracket where like the little leg goes in.
Yeah,
I think that's okay. But now it's going to be a little bitch to get that thing off if the shift shaft seal leaks. But
Yeah, he probably cooked the fuck out of the seal for the shaft.
Yeah, if he wanted there, he probably cooked the fuck out of it for sure.
Yeah, wow. Wonder why it's leaking.
All right. Mad Mike, I think, asked the question that we've already answered, like best or worst transmissions to work on. So we'll go to the next one here. Sports Cars Asumus asks, have you ever grenaded a 2003 Subaru WRX 5-speed after installing poly rear diff bushings? Okay, my real question is, have you ever seen someone fill an auto trans with gear oil? Tell me I'm not the only one to see someone do this.
No.
No.
Oh, no.
No fucking way.
I'm surprised I haven't. I haven't seen anybody put gear oil in a fucking automatic transmission. But as for the Subaru being grenaded, I had a fucking brother who would beat the shit out of his Subaru. And the thing is, mommy told me to fix the car for him because mommy loves her little boy, right? And I changed that differential 3 times.
Oh, shit.
Because homie just beat the shit out of it. And after that, for the third time, we were like, dude, you know what? We're going to put it together, but we're not going to fix this anymore. And you kind of took it easy. But yeah, it right. fucking explodes like crazy, for sure.
We've had in the shop at Mercedes, we've had people come in with empty transmissions and engines filled with transmission fluid.
God fucking damn it.
Engines?
Yes.
How do you miss? How do you make that mistake?
The same people that put the washer fluid in the engine oil because they don't fucking know.
What you have are the two dipsticks. You have a dipstick for the transmission, and you also have a dipstick for the engine.
The oil.
Yes. So I think they filled the transmission fluid in the oil dipstick and then drained the transmission before they did that. So that's what we've seen.
You know what's so weird though? Like the engine dipstick is so fucking skinny compared to like an ATF dipstick.
It's also in a different spot.
It is.
It's also attached yellow, to the engine.
We'll go to the next one. JJ Knight asks, what's your personal favorite transmission? You've already answered that. The Mercedes 7226.
Well, you said European. But
okay. What's your personal favorite transmission as a whole?
All time favorite, which I love. For sure, it would be a 4L60E. Okay. A lot of people talk shit on them, you know, but that's a trend. Because a lot of people, I think it's crazy when a car hits 100,000 miles and it takes a shit after 100,000 miles. People are like, this thing didn't fucking last that long. And I'm like, bro, 100,000 miles of like you being the shit out of it, running late, going to get your coffee. I think if a car hits over 100,000, that's good. If it hits 100,000, I think you got your money's worth, honestly, out of a transmission. Another factor, cool thing about the 4L6E, bro, you invest so little in that fucking unit just to rebuild it and get it back on its feet. Like, out of all cars, you rebuild it, get it back on its feet, you get another 100,000 miles, you know? And it won't fucking hurt the bank, you know? Out of all transmissions, I could do the 4060, like, if I'm trying to hook someone up, like, 18 to 2,000, easy. And that's you start thinking about all the other transmissions. A 470W for an F-150, that one's easily 22 to 24. Once you get to the 6Ls and the 6Rs, now you're at 45, 4800. The 8 speeds, you're at 5 to 6. 7 speeds, 10 speeds, you're at 7 to 8,000. And those are my prices, right? So, like, 4L6E, $1,800 for in this fucking economy.
That's nothing.
I think it's bitching, you know? You can beat the shit out of it. If you want to beat the shit out of it, you rebuild it and it doesn't hurt the bank, honestly.
Hell yeah.
I have a question for you.
So,
have you ever rebuilt a Honda Insight transmission?
Honda Insight.
They're common for second gear grind, and mine has that.
A stick shift?
Yeah.
On Insight? No, I haven't done an Insight. I've done a Civic.
Manual hybrid.
What?
Yeah. Wait, please tell me you've heard of the Civic hybrids and the Insights that are hybrids with manual transmissions.
No.
What? Okay.
I also didn't know it was a thing until you mentioned you were getting one. I was like, oh, that's weird. I didn't know that was
Why does Japan have to make shit so complicated, bro?
It's specifically just Honda.
That is fucking nuts.
You could get a 2000 to 2006 Honda Insight, which was the first commercially available hybrid in the U.S. You can get them with a manual transmission. You can also get the first generation Civic hybrid, CRZ Insight second generation. I don't know if you get a second generation Insight with a hybrid, but you can get a CRZ with a hybrid. CRZs are kind of lame, but the first generation Civic hybrid, you can get it. It's a hybrid vehicle that gets, you know, 50, 60, 70 miles a gallon on the highway with a fucking manual transmission.
I have a question.
It's so sick.
So with the hybrid system and a clutch, are you able to press the gas and go and then let out the clutch? Is that a thing that happens?
No, so basically how it works.
I'm thinking of the way the Prius works. Like, it's, you just hit the gas and it's like
The Prius's hybrid system is built into the drive system. It is all integrated. Okay. You cannot separate the features. But the Insight, I haven't talked about the Insight on the podcast yet, really. So I'm excited.
We might need to save it for a non-guest episode. So
probably. But basically, the gist of it is you have a IMA inverter with a giant stator bolted to the flywheel. and then you have a motor basically around the stator in the middle, and you can disable the hybrid system completely and drive it as a regular car with just a really heavy clutch, a really heavy flywheel, I guess. So you can lug the shit out of it. I mean, you can go down to like 200 RPM in traffic. It's fucking crazy. But it has a regular clutch, a completely normal manual transmission driving experience, except when you're braking in gear, it will do regenerative braking. And if you are accelerating past a certain amount, it activates the IMA motor and it gives you an electric assist. Super, super cool setup. I wish Honda would do it again.
I wish one
that. That's sounds like the bill of fix that would be super
cool. Fucking cool. I did a clutch on my Insight, and you have to have a special IMA puller to pull the magnetic stator off of the fucking flywheel, because if you do it by hand, it might go back in with your fingers on the other side and cut your fingers off. So that's why they invented that tool. There are multiple cases of that happening. Do not replace a clutch in your Honda Insight without the IMA bearing puller tool. You will cut your fingers off. Do not do it. You will cut your fingers off. I promise.
PSA from Flag Time.
Like, there actually is no way to do it. Don't do a Honda Insight or 2003 to 2006 or 2000 to 2006 Insight.
Jesus Christ.
Or CRZ clutch without the clutch hybrid IMA puller tool. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's really bad. You will die if you do that.
Some guy's fingers in my transmission. What the
fuck? That, yeah.
Sushi Sausage asks, why do automotive CVTs suck? Is there a better way to make them reliable for neglected use?
Yeah, put a regular transmission in it.
I think it's like anything, man. CVTs, especially the fucking Nissans, holy shit. Those things go out like a fucking like a light bulb, right? They go out like crazy. Honda CVTs. Honda CVTs, man, I haven't seen that many go out. I think they're pretty fair. I think
Honda CVTs and Toyotas are great.
Yeah, Toyotas are pretty good too. Nissans are, I don't know what the fuck they did, right? They charge almost around three grand list price. They only give one fucking year of warranty on it. Like, they're like, here's a brand new unit, fresh as fuck, fresh cut. By the way, we only trust this bitch to work for 1 year. You know, I think
it's fucking work after that. You should probably get a Honda or a Toyota.
I will say about the Prius that I owned, it was before I got rid of it, it was at 295,000 miles. And I drove it like a fucking rally car. I was flooring it everywhere. The first thing that went out was the head gasket.
The transmission was still good. God damn.
How the fuck did you blow the head gasket on a Prius?
Just by driving it like a rally car.
Jesus Christ.
I think the biggest thing, though, is people servicing their shit, bro. You have no idea how many people bring their fucking cars to me. And I always ask this question just to get like a spectrum from them, right? And almost 99.9% of the time, when did you ever service this transmission? And like, oh, never.
What does that mean?
I thought it was fluid. A lifetime transmission.
Yeah. So lifetime, I think if they take care of their shit, you know, I think if someone would change their CVT fluid, ATF fluid, you know, every 20 to 30,000 miles, that would fucking increase the life substantially, at least like 30 to 50%. Because a 4060, right? Fair transmission goes out around 100,000, maybe 200,000. I knew a fucker who would change it once a year. Now that's pretty excessive, right? But he would change it once a year, filter, gasket, fluid. That guy had 400,000 miles on his 4060. And it just shows that if you change, right? Because the filter is where it breathes out of, right? The fluid is like the blood, right? You keep the blood nice and cherry. I always use the metaphor of cholesterol. Once the fluid gets dark and musty, it starts building up on like the arteries, right? Just like we build up on our veins and shit. Once the fluid gets nasty, you're fucked. Like, you keep that fluid beautiful red every fucking year, it's going to run bitching, you know? So I think people should just be more responsible and fix and take care of their shit.
Maintain your shit. That's why the dealerships recommend the transmission services every 30,000, because it's like we as a dealership would rather replace your fluid than your transmission. It makes us more money to just make money off of services than make money off of like big jobs.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't Toyota recommend the first transmission fluid change at 100,000 and then 30,000 after that?
Yeah, I think I've heard Toyota ask for 100,000. I'm not sure they changed their philosophy, but I've had a lot of customers go to Toyota and they tell them that's 100,000-mile fluid. And I'm like, fuck. I think
it depends on which exact transmissions in the car, because I've seen that on like some and not on others.
With the newer Toyotas, I know from like, I say newer, I'm talking like 2015 and up, their coolant interval, they recommend not to change the coolant for the first time until it hits 100,000, and then you do it every 30 or 40,000.
Coolant's a little different, I think, though, because it's like if the engine is all aluminum and like all the gaskets are like designed to work with a specific super like engineered Toyota branded coolant.
They are.
Then yeah, because that's how engines are designed to work. They are assembled and tested by engineers with a specific fluid or a chemical. So when you maintain it with that same chemical, that's why like people are like, I'm going to just put universal coolant in my shit and see what happens. And like, no, you should use the one that's specifically designed to work with the gaskets and the water pump and everything. Like, what if something doesn't get along with a water pump and makes the fucking impeller fall off and clog your radiator or something? But exactly. Yeah, like shit like that. Like, just if you maintain your shit, then it will last longer. I don't know why that's a hot, crazy that's not concept. A hot, crazy right? concept. Hot take here.
This is a soft timer, like we don't have to absolutely go by it, but there's 8 minutes left on the timer and we've got 9 questions, so
all right, let's go. I'll shut up.
Ford Tech 1397 asks, it's related to the last question that we had, please give an honest rundown of Subaru CVT transmissions.
Oh
says
boy.
He's got a 2024 Legacy with a CVT and a lot of people are telling him it's gonna fail.
I mean, I've seen, you know, like from me seeing Subarus, they last pretty fucking long. Like, I think they last a fair amount. I haven't seen too much. I'm not sure if my climate of where I live. I'm in Santa Ana, right? That's a fucking barrio. Like, a bunch of Mexicans and shit. I'm not sure if Mexicans are really into Subarus, you know? But I don't see them that much.
Not down there,
but
anyway. Probably.
But I usually see them with a pretty good high mileage, you know? And I've met a lot of mechanics who say the Forester and all that shit's pretty fair. I do know, though, if you look up off-roading videos of those cars, they don't produce that much torque. You know, I'm not sure if it's a torque converter and shit or that belt. But I don't know. I think they're fair. But, you know, I think Subarus are known for, like, off-roading and shit. And if it comes to CVT, I don't think a CVT was designed to go off-roading. You know, I think.
No.
I mean, a fucking belt to go up a rock. I think that's fucking crazy, in my opinion. No.
Premium member Spencer Delfo asks, why did my transmission grenade itself after I only put 400 horsepower through it?
Oh shit, what kind of car is it?
He didn't give an answer.
Was it a fucking Miata?
Yeah.
I know the manual
started at like 180 and he fucking doubled the horsepower. I mean, he's probably being the shit out of it.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I know the T5 and my Mustang will grenade if you put more than 350 foot-pounds of torque through it.
Jesus.
Shit, that's a good amount though. I think people don't understand when you go to the high performance side, shit's gonna break. You want to have fucking fun?
Yeah,
shit's gonna break.
Weird concept.
Yeah, the thing is,
they think, oh, I can have a lot of horsepower and have a car that's designed to have longevity. Like, no, it doesn't like work like that. You want a basic ass daily driver car. All stock, that sucker will last you long. You start fucking putting in a turbocharger, supercharger, even shift kits, like high performance shift kits, fucking gears are bucking a lot more. That puts more stress on the clutches, more stress on the accumulators, on the plates. Shit gets damaged, you know? So, I mean, horsepower went up, something broke, makes sense to me, honestly.
Yeah.
Most modifications cause damage. Fun fact.
For sure.
There's also
some
everybody's
of them don't. But
everybody's focused on the horsepower. Nobody seems to fucking pay attention to the torque.
They just want to go fast on a highway. Yeah. That's all they want to do.
The torque likes to twist things into two pieces.
Yes.
For sure.
Torque likes to make one thing two things.
Premium member Ashton Green asks, do you have any suggestions for building a 7226 to handle a boatload of torque?
7226. I would say torque converter. They do sell some billet style torque converters, so they don't get kicked up. As for the train, the train's pretty fucking bitchin', honestly. Like, I think it's pretty good. I haven't found any aftermarket gears that might be like maybe billet or like some special structures. I think the train's pretty good inside. As for valve body, maybe like throw a shift kit in it, right? Increase increase line pressure in the boost valve, regulator valves, just stronger springs, so it just bucks a little bit more, you know. But if they're going for longevity, there are some like subtle shift kits that aren't designed to make that thing buck. It's just designed to help fix imperfections, right? Like a torque converter drag, right? A little slippage going on, small slippages due to like maybe some design errors in the drums. So you could do stuff like that. But out of anything, I would think putting a higher, like a really heavy duty torque converter and just building that thing by itself is pretty fucking bitching. You throw a shift kit in it and it should last pretty long.
And I will say this. They told us in our Mercedes transmission classes that, so like a E350 and an E63 will have the same like shell transmission, like the housing. They'll just have different Newton meter rated clutch packs. So like a clutch pack would be rated for a certain level of torque on the E350. In the E63, the clutch packs will be beefier and they'll be able to take that torque. So you could probably do a clutch pack switch for something that could be possible. That's just what I've learned in class. So that's makes probably sense. A good way to do that. Masonite 500. Oops. Hold on. Ah. There we go. Masonite 500 asks, how are the CVTs you find in automobiles different from the types of CVTs you find in off-road vehicles, such as ATVs?
I mean, CVTs like on a basic ass car compared to a CVT on off-road. So we're like talking CVTs on Subarus.
No, like ATVs and side-by-sides.
ATVs?
Like power sports.
Do those have CVTs though?
I don't fucking do that.
No, they do.
Yeah,
I imagine.
I think in an ATV, it's called a variator,
a variable clutch.
Yeah, like lines. That's. I think that's run with like a physical belt, like a real like rubber belt in a case. That's like the shit that scooters have. I don't.
Yeah,
I took apart a scooter one time when I was like 9, and then I didn't put it back together, and then I was like, okay, well, now I don't have a scooter anymore.
Patreon member DogMilk53 asks, what are some tips for starting your own shop? Any regrets or things you'd wish you'd known?
All right, so tips for starting your own shop.
Pay your taxes.
Pay your taxes. Don't fucking get audited.
Do that.
Right? Report everything. Maybe like one time you don't report it, right? But try to report everything.
The IRS wants to know your location.
I would say I think it's big. I think one of the biggest things in an independent shop is having communication skills, right? Like having charisma. Like I think if you don't have charisma, I don't think you'll get that far. You know, like if you're running the shop by yourself, I think that's huge. Maybe shop if you hire someone with charisma, then bet. But if you can't fucking talk to customers and you can't learn how like right, sometimes a customer will come in and I'm sorry, but like they're a bitch, right? They're fucking assholes. Maybe some like high prestige person walks in and they look at you like dog shit, right? Sometimes you gotta like let that shit slide, you know? Like money is money. If I get a rude ass customer, I don't care if they're rude to me, you know, I'm gonna sell the job. And I 100%. Think that's very important because I think a lot of people let their emotions get into it, right? Mm-hmm. And some people are rude, but there's some customers that are fucking great. But I think it's very important that even with those rude ones, you should learn how to communicate and still sell that job with them. Because that just increases, right? Those are two different types of spectrums, right? That just increases more people for you to work on. And I think that's what really takes a toll. Because rude people, like, don't get me wrong, I've been doing this for years. But sometimes, I'll get like fucking a couple rude people throughout the industry. And that shit puts a toll on you. And even after you sell that car, understand that that rude person might be calling you every fucking day. Even after you said, hey, the car's gonna be ready in a week, they'll call you the next day and be like, is the car ready? And you're like, I literally just told this person it's a week timeline. And you'll tell them, hey, we agreed on a week. He's like, oh, okay, I was just curious. And then they'll fucking call you the next day.
I was
day,
just like, stopping in.
Yeah.
Just wanted to see if it was done yet.
Yeah, they do the peekaboo, right? They drive by and they fucking come out of nowhere. And they're like, oh, so is this my car? I'm like, yeah, you see the fucking license plate, right? Like, and they're like, oh. And then one thing that bothers me is with customer relationships, right? Sometimes I'm a workaholic, dude. I'll stay at the shop till like, I'll get to the shop at 6 a.m. I'll fucking stay there till like midnight sometimes just to crank out shit. And because the customer was really railing me about having the car done soon and they wanted something that was impossible to do, I did it. And then when I call them and I say the car's ready, they'll be like, oh, so the car didn't have anything wrong? Or was it a small problem? And I'll be like, dude, like, no, I just fucking stayed up till midnight to get this thing done, you know? So.
Yeah,
I think like, that's the biggest thing.
I just busted my ass to get this shit done for you, and you're being a dick to me. So,
yeah, just learning
to deal with those tough
customers. You know, I think that's definitely a keystone factor. You know,
yeah.
Running a shop.
We're gonna skip two questions because you've pretty much already answered those. So we got two more questions left. Kyle Olson 25 asks, what is your deciding factor on whether or not a transmission can be rebuilt or not or be replaced?
Okay, that's super simple, right?
Mm.
First step, whenever a car comes, I don't give a what the fuck it is. If it's got a dipstick, I'm pulling dipstick out, right? Pull it out. I look at the consistency. We look at it. Is it a nice, pretty red? Is it brown? Is it dark? Is there metallic flakes? You can tell there's metallic flakes if you grab it and just rub it on your hand. All of my fucking glove haters out there, grab a paper towel and put it on the paper towel, right? And you look at it. Is there any gray? If there's any gray, that's going to say there's metal. If there's no gray, that's a pretty good sign. If it's a little bit brown, it's high mileage. That's already a first distinguish that maybe it's not too shabby, right? Next step would be drop the pan. Then you look at the bottom of the pan. That's like the most evidence. Like once you drop the pan, man, like, that's like literally cracking open like the human body and you can just see like,
what's going on here.
If there's a bunch of metallic material, game. If there's not metallic material and it's just really dirty, there's a fucking good chance that your filter's clogged up, you know? And I kid you not, I fixed a lot of cars that have a delay in drive or have sluggish engagement going forward, going back. Another thing that you should be very wary of is like your pump making a whining noise, right? Wah, wah, all that shit. Could just be from a fucking filter being clogged, you know? So I think if this person who asked this question, if like, or anybody, right? If you're mechanically inclined, it doesn't hurt to do a fucking Hail Mary and drop the pan and change the filter and see if the bitch shifts right. If it fucking shifts right, fucking hell yeah, that Hail Mary did it. If it doesn't shift right, the sucker's coming out, you know? Because regardless, a lot of people will be like, well, what if the valve body's bad, right? Well, what if the solenoids are bad. Now, if it is a solenoid, a shift solenoid, you got a shot, right? Maybe a doorway is not opening up. It's not allowing one holding member to go through. But if it's any other solenoid and a valve is bad, the problem is maybe, yeah, you can slap a new valve body on, new solenoids. It'll fix the issue. But once you started experiencing that problem already and you already had a slip going on, there's damage inside, you know, just like brake pad material. It's damaged. So if you do the valve body, the shift solenoid job, now you have a car that isn't secure, that might fucking fail on you one day because those clutches are shot because one of those components was bad. So now if you go on a fucking Vegas trip, a long ass trip, there's a little bit of like insecurity in that shit, you know, where it might fail, you know. So I think filter is the biggest thing. If a shift solenoid is bad, you got a shot. Everything else, if any other component's failing, it's always better just to rebuild it, you know. But if you're in a tight niche, sure, give the fucking valve body a try. It's shifting great. Send it. But no, there's not that much security in it because something internally is probably already damaged, you know.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
How do you feel about adjusting like external clutches? Like when you can kind of adjust like a band? Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, that I would still consider that a Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. But I have done that for people a lot and fucking thing runs for another 5 years, you know? Yeah. So it, you know, if someone looks at you from a shop or like by the book, is like they'll be like, is that a professional job? Well, not really. But I get what you mean, dude. Like I help out a lot of people. Like if I see a person in need and I know there's like a 5R55 4 transmission, right? There's two adjustment bands on it. If I fucking adjust one and I hook them up, man, those people are grateful. They'll bring me a fucking 12 pack later, like some fucking carnitas.
Yeah.
Like fucking tortilla bread.
Fuck yeah.
Like, fucking dude, I've had people bring me fucking tacos, like homemade. Like, you know, I will help people out, but I think that idea of professionality is kind of BS. You know, I think if you can hook someone up and give it a shot, why fucking not? But there is just that thing that, you know, if that band is slipping, remember there's material getting lost. So if you tighten it up, it might lose more material, and then it'll get to the point where it's steel on steel contact, and now you got more contamination going through the transmission. Oof. But there's, you know, there's two sides to it always, you know.
Mm-hmm. Always, yeah, because it's just like, well, I mean, you could take a shot. I mean, like, as a mechanic, I've kind of come to the conclusion that if you kind of fuck with a transmission, it's probably fucked anyway. Like, just when something comes in, like, in my experience, because I've had like two or three transmissions that I've like fucked up and like were bad. Like, good example, I have a 95 Explorer and it has a 4R55 in it. And I was driving the headliner of my Saab to the place to get it reupholstered, and I dropped it off. No, wait, it was when I was picking it up. I was picking up the headliner for my Saab from the place that was reupholstering it, and I, you know, drove all the way there, got off the freeway, got to the place, was getting back on the freeway, and it was like first. And then I was like, uh-oh. And then I was like, like all the way on fucking red light. Do you know what a 4-liter V6 Ford Explorer sounds like wrapped to like fucking 6,000 RPM?
I mean, timing chain is rattling like a son of a gun, huh?
Hey, it's a fucking overhead valve one, not overhead cam one. Okay. But it was the lifter sticking. Anyway, I just like drove on the shoulder, and then it eventually like just fucking slammed into second, and then it shifted into the rest of the gears, and I'm like, okay, I am driving home, and I'm not gonna drive this again for a while. And then I like drove it to my work, changed the fluid. The fluid was like cloudy. I didn't think of anything, right? Fucking clean the valve body out that had rust in it. Also didn't think of anything. Didn't think that maybe the radiator transmission cooler's ruptured. Didn't maybe think that. Put it back together. It was fine. I changed the fluid. It was completely fine. And then the next day, I was driving to work and I did the same thing. And I was like, fuck. And I looked at I checked my coolant and I was like, oh, that looks like a fucking strawberry milkshake. And then I checked my transmission fluid and I was like, that looks like strawberry milkshake. And I'm like, god damn it, I figured it out. And then I got a new transmission from Jasper. I got a Jasper transmission in my car. How much is that? Man, it was like $2,600 or something. It was...
That's not too shabby.
No, it wasn't. There was a shop that was willing to do it for $2,000. And I was like,
What year was that?
It's a 95. It's a 95 with a... last year.
Oh, last year, yeah. Yeah, I think...
I think it was this year.
Time is relative.
So I remember you talking about it. Didn't you make a video?
I made a video.
Yeah, you made a video.
That was, and then immediately after I replaced the transmission, the fucking fuel pump went out. And I was like, cool, my fucking car's falling apart. Right after I get it. Cool. Right,
well, we got one more Patreon question here.
Yeah.
Premium member Police 428 asks, did you ever have to go to an urgent care or emergency room due to either metal or ATF in places they should not be? A la open wounds or sharp bits creating wounds.
Dude, I can't tell you how many times, and still to this day I'm a dumbass, how many times I've gotten metal stuck in my eye. Like, so many times. I think I've gone to the hospital. That's when I can't get that fucker out, right? Fuck up. I wish I had I got a life lesson for y'all, too. I'm not sure if you guys learned this trick. After I learned this, no metal in my eye can stand a chance, bro. But anyways, I didn't know this trick. I've gone to the hospital maybe like 4 to 5 times, and then eye specialist maybe another 4 to 5 times. Like, so I've gone like 5 times. And those are like the painful ones, right? Where like you fucking blink and it's like literally hitting the back of your brain.
Yeah.
But, I think I've gotten a lot of cuts. I mean, I get cuts for days, bro. Like, my hands are all jacked, you know? So as for that, like, I think that's a norm. I don't think anything of that. But I'm not sure if you guys ever learned about this. If you ever get metal stuck in your eye and that sucker won't come out, I teach my kids this too. If you, first of all, I'd always recommend leaving a water bottle in your trunk, right? But if you get a water bottle and you have a thumbtack or anything very pokey, make 3 ports on that water bottle. And now you have like an orifice that's going to shoot 3 jets, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a great idea. Holy shit.
You can control it, right? So if that bitch is stuck in there and you're getting fucked, because, right, when you get something stuck in your eye, man, anxiety will make you fucking freak the fuck out. So if that bitch isn't coming out, you can squeeze that thing hard. At this point, oh my God, the water's going to dry out my eye. Who gives a fuck? Like, just get that metal out of my eye, right? So you can control it and hit it at different angles. So you can like jet that shit out. And still to this day, does Rigo wear safety glasses? No. But does he still get metal in his eyes? Yes. Does that water bottle trick get that bitch out every single time? It's phenomenal, you know? And it's great.
That's a all great trick. All
you
need is a fucking
water bottle, you know?
I mean, you should wear safety glasses, but if you don't, then that's literally just if you take like a water bottle, fucking poke holes in it. That's just like that's just basically what a fucking eyewash station is.
This is probably, it's even
better, bro. Because
that's an eyewash station. That's a great idea.
When it shoots the water at your eye, it's like a fucking like a little shitty like flow of water. You know, like that flow. You need something like to knock that shit, like get it out of the way, like agitate it and move it.
Wow.
That water bottle trick, that shit will fucking hit your eye good and get it out, you know?
If you don't have
a needle, you can just use a fucking pen, you know? You just pop it with the pen. Sure, you might get a little ink in there, but I think a metal in your eye and a little bit of ink is, there's definitely a little risk there, you know, that it's willing to take.
This is probably the most educational episode of Flag Time we've ever had.
It is, actually.
Yeah,
I have a caveat. That's fucking crazy. That. So, yeah, literally,
I have one in my toolbox, honestly.
2 days ago, I was working on a thing and I went to like break a nut loose. I'm just dirt in my fucking eyeballs. I was like, cool.
God damn it. I hate that.
Go to wash my eyes out. I don't even get the fucking socket back on the nut. I hit the thing, dirt right in my fucking eyeball. Right? Go wash it again. I did it a third fucking time.
Oh, like Patrick from fucking SpongeBob.
And I was
SpongeBob.
Like, okay, I'm putting the fucking safety glasses on. And for like the past couple of days, I'm tired of getting shit in my eyes now. I'm just going to wear the fucking safety glasses.
I bought a pair of those Matco safety glasses, and I'm glad I wore them when I did an alignment recently. So I have the wrenches for the tie rods that are supposed to be for like worn out nuts. Because it like grabs onto the metal really good.
It like grips them.
Yeah. These tie rods were so stuck that it basically sheared off the extra material. And I was at this position, and when it sheared off, the very end of the wrench knocked right into my safety glasses. Oh, and I'm pretty sure if I wasn't wearing safety glasses, I would have lost an eye probably. Because I would have gouged my own eye out with a wrench. So, yeah, I'm glad I fucking have those.
Safety glasses are important.
Do all of y'all wear safety glasses?
I do.
I don't. I just wear regular glasses. I can't fucking wear safety glasses.
I do
if
now.
If I had prescription ones, angry. I would wear them.
I noticed, like, for me, like, I get metal stuck in my eyes, I have a fucking traumatic episode, and then I wear safety glasses for a couple days. And I'm like, yeah, I'll fucking need them. And
like when you get a speeding ticket.
The circle of life, you know, for safety glasses, for sure.
Well, whenever I work on cars, I always think my main motivation for wearing safety glasses.
Hold on. Oh God, what's he doing?
This is a VR headset. If I lost one of my eyes, I wouldn't be able to play VR games anymore. That's my high priority there. That's why I'm like safety glasses. Anyway, thank you. What?
Go. Oh, I have one more thing. At my shop, I did this. Because our eyewash station, so it doesn't get cleaned out like it's supposed to.
Bleh.
So that's against
OSHA regulations. You should report that.
Well, it was broken completely at one point. It did get
that's
fixed.
Also an OSHA violation. Also against OSHA.
That's
why it got fucking fixed. So,
but it's still an OSHA violation.
I know. That's why it is fixed now.
Oh.
Anyway. I don't remember what happened to this thing. I think I dropped it and it broke or something. But I had a neodymium magnet about this fucking big.
Fuck.
Oh boy.
Anytime I got literally for getting metal out of my eye, I would just put it on my fucking eyeball. Move my eye around. It would.
Hopefully it's not on the backside of your eye and it fucking rips through your fucking eye and goes back into the
board. Oh, if you get a strong enough neodymium, absolutely. So you just like, because if you just put it flat on your face, your eye's not quite touching it. You know how like you put your hand there
and
you can't feel it? If it's a big enough magnet, those are strong as fuck. So if you stick it to something, it's
they'll crush not your gonna... hand, dude.
Exactly. I got one about that strong. Fuck. And I would just open my eyelids, right? And then I would just put it there. And it would, I'd move my eye around, I'd look around and everything. And it, I think every single time it's got, if it was metal that was in my eye, it would
get it out. It was ferrous metal.
Yeah.
A piece of aluminum, it's going to stay
aluminum wouldn't do fucking anything.
No, but if it's a magnetic metal, I would just grab it, do it, see, oh, it's still in there. It's not magnetic. Let me go wash my eye out.
Anyway, thank you to our premium members for supporting this dumbass show. We really appreciate your generous support. We'll go to the Instagram story responses now, which can be anything from wienor to an actual response.
Wienor to ball.
Yes. And as tradition, we always highlight the person who puts the first response in. And today's first response is by a user by the name of Moto Clicks. And they ask how to properly lube something cum emoji.
Cum emoji.
How to properly lube something?
Yeah.
What's the cum emoji? What?
The three water drops.
Yeah, the three water drops.
It's water.
It's used as the cum emoji.
Everybody uses the squirt emoji.
There's a lot of shit that gets lubed. He doesn't mention anything specific of what we're lubing here.
You gotta rub it really fast until it squirts, and then you're
that's
good to
not,
go.
That's not how you lube something.
Something squirt.
As for like transmission assembly lube, I'm a gunker, you know? I'll put my whole hand in that shit and just fucking gunk that shit on, you know? And as for bearings, put a good amount of ATF on it, you know, work it in there, and yeah, I mean, fucking lube it. No difference from the auto shop to the bedroom, you know? Just squirt that shit.
Hell yeah. Everyone's got the big giant container of wheel bearing grease somewhere in the shop.
You know, I will say this: a lot of people
on the windshield.
A lot of people do talk like in my videos. I'll be like, "That looks pretty dry." Like, honestly, like the transmission doesn't need to be drenched. Like, I don't have to fucking grab the whole drum, dip in a fucking 5 gallon bucket of ATF, pull it out, and like slip it in. You know, as long as you keep it nice and wet. Splash rotation of lubrication. Once you fill up the transmission, it fucking lubes it up instantly, dude. You know,
yeah.
And the main importance of where this oil is going is through all the lube ports, right? All the oil ports where it's getting pressurized through the pump. So at the end of the day, the pump's going to suck up the fluid and instantly to shoot that shit into all the orifices, right? In between the shaft and the
bearing. It is instantaneous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quick as fuck.
Hell like, unless your pump's worn out.
Yeah, then you're fucked.
What is your name? Caffeinated Hibernation asks,
interesting.
What makes straight cut gears better than helical? They sound great. Noise. What's the benefit of them?
Noise.
Gears, pretty basic. Straight cut, like if you think about it, right, the contact is always 100% right away. Like just bang. Mm-hmm. Helical is like great. A contact that gets passed through. Cut. Straight cut gears are nice because it's just straight gears. To the fucking point. That's what I tell my kids, you know, straight to the point. Straight 100% contact as it's spinning through. So they're a lot more durable. The helical designs are a lot more quiet. And some say they're more durable, but at the end of the day, you have 100% contact all the time. That's why there's a lot of racing cars with those straight cut gears, you know. You don't want to fucking straight cut.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, but I
not
think,
when you're in bumper to bumper traffic. Yeah,
your DB should not be straight cut gears, you know. My professor that was a transmission teacher, he fucking lost his hearing because him and another teacher, they paid to go like race these cars on the track. And there was a waiver that said you must wear earplugs or you could have permanent ear damage. Homie forgot his earplugs. And it was like fucking $2,000. Like they were driving these fucking nice ass cars. They were signed the waiver. And he's like, well, I'm not going to turn around. Like, I'm just going to fucking send it. And I'm surprised they didn't even offer him, or he's just probably dumb and didn't say, hey, I don't have earplugs. Anyways, he fucking drove the circuit. I think it was 5 laps. he said from there on he lost his hearing. Like he said his hearing shot. Like he would, I think he told me like 60% of his hearing is just fucked.
Oh shit. So,
yeah.
They're loud as fuck.
It actually does.
Loud as fuck. But they're strong and straight to the point. Straight cut. Oh yeah. Straight to the point.
I have a motorcycle with straight cut timing gears. And that fucking thing sounds like it's supercharged. It's fucking crazy. Yeah. So cool.
See, we'll do one more Patreon question if I can find a good one.
Patreon. You mean Instagram? You mean Instagram?
Excuse me, Instagram question. We'll do one more Instagram question
if I can find a good one.
Get your shit together, Eric.
Shut the goddamn up.
Somebody needs to make a meme of why are straight, like the... What are the benefits of straight cut gears? And then just someone just edits. Well, who forced user, make that a meme of just cut in a fucking straight cut gear, like ear blasted fucking noise after that sound bite. What are the benefits of straight cut gears?
That's
about it.
I guess we'll end with this one. Dead 32 times asks, how so fast?
How so fast?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I think if you wipe your ass enough times, you get faster at it, you know? I've done a lot. I've calculated it. On average, I think I've done like 2,600 units in my lifetime.
God,
complete overhaul. So
it's a lot of trannies.
I honestly wanted a video of a blindfold put together on a 460 and like time lapse it, and I think I can fucking do it, dude. Just give me a full bench, and then I'll just use my hands, move around. But at the end of the day, it's practice. You do something so many fucking times, you know. You put a sandwich together so many times, you can probably put the sandwich together with your eyes closed. I just think,
oh, hell yeah.
It's just consistency, you know, when doing those kind of things.
You do it with such a smooth pace. It almost looks fucking fake.
Yeah.
You do it so nonchalantly, you might as well just be breathing.
That's the fascinating thing, too, is like seeing a professional do what he does best, even though you feel like it's just another day, to somebody who doesn't know how a transmission's built, they're going, holy shit.
How a transmission's built. I'm still like, holy shit.
I didn't know this was so crazy. I don't know, like, I grew up in this shit, so I thought this was normal. I thought this was like waking up or like fucking taking out the trash. But like I posted it up and like, holy shit, people are really mind blown about this, you know? So I don't know. I think I have a couple key factors. One thing I will say, and I hope my viewers really appreciate this, is when you look at my videos, bro, they're one take. Mm-hmm. They're not clipped, you know? If you think I've never fucked up doing a video, I have fucked up. And man, one time I had such an off day where I had to do 8 takes. I was taking it apart. I didn't like it, you know? I was like, oh, I can shave off a couple seconds. What do I do? Yeah. I put the bitch back together.
Oh, shit.
I do it again. I'm almost at the end, and my fucking pliers slip, you know? I'm like, oh.
Gotta rebuild
transmission again. I put it all back together. So sometimes it'll take me an hour and a half, bro, just to make a 3-minute video, you know? Because I want it to be perfect. So I think that's what people like about my videos, because they're not these clips. It's just like me live as we go, like one solid clip, you know, and I have a couple factors. Like I got that first 2 seconds where I got to make it funny, you know, I got to say something catchy.
Yeah.
And my goal is to keep it fast, but definitely smooth, you know, just, I don't know. At the same time, bro, like I said, I just started this in November, October. So I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, bro. I did something, people are loving it, and I'm just rinsing and repeating, you know?
We started the same way. We just started making dumb shit at work as well, posting it on the internet, and now we have a podcast with a Patreon. So, I mean, the world is your oyster, basically. Like, you can do anything you want with this kind of shit. So just, like, the sky's the limit, man, especially with the kind of following that you have. So... But yeah, thank you for joining us as well, by the way. This has been fantastic, man.
Yeah, this is super fun.
This was my first time doing a podcast, and I was thinking like, fuck, how are we gonna talk for an hour? But it's crazy how the time fucking flies, for sure. Yeah,
it's been an hour and a half now. Like
Yeah, it was good. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of Flag Time. Go follow Rego Ratio on Instagram and TikTok. Is there anything that you want to plug that you got going on right now?
What the fuck does plug mean?
Like anything you want to advertise?
I got a couple things. I'm going to be starting a subscription on my Instagram that's going to be curriculum. So they're going to be 1 hour lectures 2 to 3 times a month. I'm just going to make it around $3 to $4 a month. And I'm going to make some bitchin' manual and automatic curriculum on my subscription on Instagram, because I know a lot of people don't have the money to go to UTI. A lot of fucking colleges out there fucking suck. You know, I've seen a lot of instructors that I'm like, how the fuck do they have their job? So I'm going to be working on that. I should be launching it like probably within a month or two, and it should
That's
be badass.
Super cool.
Yeah, 1 hour long curriculums, very detailed for just $3 to $4 a month, you know, and you'll learn about manual and automatics. And as for the rest of the shit, same thing, rebuilding transmission, still Rego Ratio.
Hell yeah.
Well, fuck yeah, dude. This has been super fun. I'm glad I fucking reached out to you.
Yeah, for sure, brother. Appreciate it.
Episode that'll probably ever have happened.
Yeah, the most educational, 100%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this probably won't be the first time you're going to be on this show, honestly.
You're more than welcome to come back on.
Yeah, this is fucking awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's literally just us talking to people.
Like, this is the highlight of my work week, 100%, like hanging out with you guys.
I think like just, you know, like meeting all of these internet creatives and just kind of forming a community around that is super fun. Like, especially in the automotive service, because it's like, you know, we're all kind of doing the same shit. So if we all kind of know each other, I think it'd be really fun. Just be like, like all fucking famous movie stars and musicians all know each other. They're like, yeah, like Tom Cruise was like, yeah, I was hanging out at Brad Pitt's house the other day. And they're like, how do you know each other? Because we're fucking famous. Like that kind
of
shit.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fun. The circle of content creators that also have full-time jobs. That's the main thing.
That. Not guys that are like, here's my wake-up routine as a tri-billionaire at 17 years old.
This episode of Flag Time doesn't really have a formal ending and keeps going on for about the next 10 to 15 minutes. So you can see that over on the Flag Time Patreon if you want to. But we're going to go ahead and end the audio episode here. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Flag Time. We're going to go ahead and highlight all of our premium Patreon members just to show our appreciation to their generous support of this dumbass show. We want to thank Ansel Fuji, Ashton Green, Ben, Big Blue Caddy, Chatkid Mango, Cheesy Chap, Chrysler Connection, Devine, Devin Newbie, Dog Milk 53, Eli Hip, Ellis Chateau, Eric Firestone 512, Forced User, Ford Tech 1397, Framed Automotive, Hal, Hayden Veals, Jamie BH 911, Jan Hankey, JJ the Tech, JJ Knight 00, John Montague, Kai Dustpan, Kyle Olson 25, Level 14, Sports Cars of Sumas, Luna Cat Eye, Mad Mike, Mad Max 5, Masonite 500, Maxime Prudhomme, Midwestern Metalhead 03, Mississippi King, Mopar 1966, Nathan Nicholas Reach, Nick Toomey, Polyester 69, Police 428, Cyan Lion, Keegan John, Sushi Sausage, Spencer Delfo, Steve Henriquez, Tagarung, The Big Maple, The Forklift Guy, Vubula, William Martin Woodwood, Elysium Darkness, and Meep, but in Japanese. Again, thank you so much for your generous support, and we will see you guys next time.